Welcome to Not Quite Right. My name's Ed.
And I'm Amanda.
And this is the last of our series of interviews for Words on the Waves 2026. And we're rounding out the festival with a chat with Anna Downs. Anna is a prolific local author here on the Central Coast. We spoke to her about the importance of setting in her novels and the reasons she loves the horror genre, and the painful process of rewriting her second novel. So here is our chat with Anna Downs. We are here at Words on the Waves with Anna Downs. So tell us what brings you here to Words on the Waves.
Well, this is my local Readers Festival, Writers Festival. I've been living on the Central Coast for nigh on 15 years. And when I first got here, there wasn't really anything cultural to speak of. Obviously, it's a beautiful part of the world. And I was deeply impressed with the scenery and with the beaches and with the kind of surfy, active lifestyle. But having lived in cities all my life, like I was born in Sheffield in the UK, and I grew up there, and I studied in Manchester and then again in London, and I was an actor in London for a long time. And so I've never really lived in any kind of rural or coastal setting. And I was craving some kind of creative outlet and creative stimulation. And I had to go to Sydney to get it, you know, which I was very happy to do. But I am just so grateful to the Words on the Waves team for bringing this festival here. I mean, to have these conversations and these artists and these thought leaders on our doorstep is really important to our community, I think.
And it's not just the festival weekend now either. There's all these satellite events and other things that have emerged that go throughout the year as well now.
Yeah, they do. I've moderated a few times for Words at Wagstaff, and that is a really gorgeous event. It's always packed, and the audiences there are always really engaged. Their questions are always amazing. It feels, it's a really beautiful event, that one, actually. And I feel like there's a real sort of consistency year to year that you know that there's a real energy about it every year. And when they ask me to do it, I'm like, oh great, that one, yeah, brilliant. It always has a really nice vibe about it.
And you're here to moderate a panel for this weekend, and so you've just finished today.
Did that today, this morning. I was lucky enough to moderate for Bree Lee and Mark Smith about predominantly their latest releases. Bree's novel Seed was published late last year, and Mark's second adult novel, Where Truth Ends, was published just this week, actually, just few days ago.
Lovely.
And for somebody who has literally just published the book, he was remarkably articulate about it. You know how like authors often don't know what they've made until they've spoken about it a fair bit. But no, it was an amazing event, and really focused largely on climate anxiety and climate action, protest, the right to protest, holding many truths in your head when you're living in a sort of a limbo between devastation and hope, as we all are currently, you know, how to love the world and everyone in it when we are currently living through its destruction, and how to write fiction about big feelings, you know, big, large scale, high stakes feelings without becoming didactic or without losing character, without losing pace. You know, how do you do that? I think it's a real skill, and they've pulled it off so well. I read both of them really quickly. I mean, Mark's is a real page turner, and Bree's is like set in Antarctica as well. She's done the most amazing amount of research, and the characters are so rich. And it's very kind of philosophically textured as well. It's, both of them are brilliant.
Is that the kind of thing you would read normally? What do you tend to turn towards when you're picking up a book?
I would say I tend towards horror.
Okay.
A lot of the time. Like if I don't have any arcs to read, or, you know, any launches coming up or anything like that, I'll reach for a horror book.
You find it soothing and calming to read a horror book?
More sort of emotionally engaging.
Okay.
I find that horror books really demand engagement from you and emotional investment. And obviously, I mean, I get a huge adrenaline rush from them as well, which is often what I personally need because I'm in my head all the time, you know. And so that way of reading that actually involves your body as well for me is really important. But I do read really widely. I do love a memoir, funnily enough. I read a lot of memoirs. And I think that sort of, not sad girl fiction, but like almost mad woman fiction, you know, like women having crises of varying types is definitely up my alley. I'm really into those at the moment. Cultural commentary, nonfiction as well. Mm-hmm. I'm really into that. Anything that feels zeitgeisty or anything that feels like it's kind of capturing a moment, my monkey brain just latches straight onto it. It's like, right, yeah, brilliant. Tell me about that. What's happening there?
And so you're quite a prolific writer yourself. Would you say that you write mad women fiction?
No. My books are more psychological thriller. I think they have elements of horror, but never go, full on into that genre. They're largely relationship dramas with a thriller engine. They're very atmospheric, I would say. And, you know, there is that suspense. You know, I aim to write a page turner, but often my ideas come from some kind of big theme, you know, something that I want to write about. And then I usually find some kind of setting that I'm obsessed with. And then I think about what kind of characters would exist in that world. And it kind of goes from there.
Okay.
And I think that the suspense element, the thriller element just kind of comes out naturally. I don't think I ever set out to write in that genre, but that is just how my ideas come out.
Mm. You've written in YA and adult?
No, I've not written any YA, but interestingly, I was approached really recently by a children's publisher who was, you know, they were wondering if I'd ever be interested in writing for middle grade, which, you know, I'm very much of the opinion that, you know, let's open all the doors, let's have all the conversations, because obviously a career in the arts generally is pretty difficult, but I think it's quite widely accepted that the writing publishing industry is in a little bit of a state at the moment. So I think whatever we can do to diversify and to story tell in a more general sense is great and very healthy.
I feel like growing up, there were a lot of options for reading, for example, horror or thriller as a child. And I mean, of course, there's a lot of diverse books now, but it doesn't seem to be as popular. I feel like there's a bit of a gap there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that's about. I'm not sure whether, you know, we know there's a lot of anxiety in the younger generation, that whether we're concerned about adding to it. But like you, I sort of feel like when you read horror, it's almost like a release of that emotion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons why horror, particularly within screen, is having such a major moment.
Mm.
I think it does speak to our emotional state, but also there is that release, and that's what it's about, is kind of winding you up to a point, and then there's that kind of whoa of catharsis.
Yeah.
Add to that a lot of the humor that we're finding in horror writing and horror films and series at the moment, and it's kind of double your money, do you know what I mean? You're getting an extra layer of release on that as well. And I was actually thinking the same thing, because I was addicted to those point horror books.
Yes. Yeah.
When I was sort of, I guess, 12-ish, 13, 14, I loved them. So I'm like, yeah, you know, my kids are kind of creeping up to that age now. They're 10 and almost 12. And my 10-year-old is obsessed with Stranger Things.
Okay.
Wow. Obsessed. And I'm like, yeah, like, where are those things?
Yes.
'Cause they are. Like, my kids love a bit of horror.
Yeah. And I'm sure they exist, don't get me wrong. Like, there's horror out there, but it just feels like there's a lot of dragons. There's a lot of fantasy out there.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I see. And, of course, contemporary fiction and so on. And there's definitely a lot of themes, you know. I think we see now more than we did when we were children, books about, like, parents dying and cancer and, like, depression and all these things, which are pretty intense, but not so much the kind of the theatre of horror.
And
I feel like the world is quite safe for kids at the moment as well. Mm. But I think there is a need as well to experience some of that unsafe aspects of life as well. And kids crave that.
I think so. And honestly, I don't think you can really overstate the need for that adrenaline rush and the kind of the embodied reading, you know, the engagement that's demanded, and then that release, I think,
because,
is so helpful.
Yeah, it's like pure entertainment and escapism too, which we all crave. Like, something, if you're saying, you know, when you read horror, that's when you actually get so engaged and immersed in something, that's what everybody's looking for.
Really. I think so. Yeah. And another thing is that a lot of that, you know, a lot of suspense and horror at the moment is sort of centered around liminal spaces and this feeling of being caught between two places or spaces where you don't quite know what's happening and they're a bit bland, but also very spooky. And I just think that speaks so intimately to, again, a kind of a collective emotional state, particularly, I think, for younger people, which is why a lot of the horror that I was talking about, are that they are being written by a younger generation. Mm. Like thinking about, I mean, you know, I don't write horror. I feel like it's a bit of a miss out, but I am actually a real horror fan. And particularly, like, you know, I studied drama at university and then I went on to do a 3-year acting degree as well. But during that first drama degree, there was a lot of film theory. And I love picking movies apart. So at the moment, to see films like Backrooms, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of hotel stuff, which is interesting because I've just written a novel about a hotel, which is coming out later this year. What's the other one? There's Backrooms and then it's on the tip of my tongue. It'll come to it. Anyway, there's a lot of horror around those liminal spaces, which I think is just culturally very, very interesting.
I feel like I read somewhere or heard somewhere recently that horror tends to sort of align itself with the big issues of the time. And so if you look back historically at horror, it's sort of lining up with, well, what are the big issues in the world at that time?
What was everybody worried about? What was everybody scared of?
What are we tapping into? So I think that's really interesting as well.
It's very interesting to look back on. And horror tropes as well are really interesting. Like, for example, I think if you look at the history of vampires and how they've been important in art through the ages, and that, you know, the different incarnations of them and the different ways that they're used, the different ways that they're discussed, the different ways that they are embodied by actors and, you know, shown and all of that stuff, that's very indicative of what we're frightened of. Is, you know, it's almost the perfect vehicle, the vampire, in a lot of ways. But I, you know, I could write a paper about that. So
please do. I'd read the hell out of that. But you mentioned your book, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, it's hard because it's not been officially announced yet, so I don't quite know how much I'm able to say. But it's coming out in November. It's called Dark Days Hotel, and I think that's probably all I can say because, you know, we're at that stage at the moment where we're still deciding how we're going to pitch it and we've not quite settled on an official back copy yet and all of that. I don't want to overstep, but
no.
I am really excited about it. I've had a great time writing it. It's actually quite sciencey, which is a departure for me. And it's about class and health and billionaires and body standards.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I've had a good time writing this book. It's been long, but a good time.
And you often write with setting in mind, you mentioned. So what are some of the settings that really capture your imagination?
I think I have quite a gothic storyteller mind. It's usually a house. Yeah, so The Safe Place was a house, a property. The Shadow House, obviously, the house. Dark Days Hotel is a hotel, it's a building. And that the idea from that actually came, I became obsessed with this one particular hotel. It's called Fogo Island Inn and it's in Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this it looks like, what were those things on legs in Star Wars called? The AT-ATs.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like one of those. Like it's this enormous boxy white building. So it's kind of interesting in that sense. And it's built, you know, it's right at the edge of the world. It's so isolated, super luxurious, but it's run as a kind of a sustainable operation. So its profits feed into the community and the community feed into it. So the two are really inextricably tied. And so it's very codependent. Do you know what I mean? I was really fascinated with that and the fact that I felt like I had done very hot claustrophobic places and I was really looking for something a bit cold and a bit wild.
Mm.
The only time that I have not written about a particular place was Red River Road, and that was out of a need to write something that was constantly on the move.
Okay.
So that's about road trip. It's, you know, these two women traveling in a camper van. It's a van life thriller.
Do you find that comes first, the place? Is that, from what you're saying, that's where you get the inspiration, right? You find the location and then you move into the type of story that you want to tell?
Yeah, I think so. I think I do get a place in mind that I become kind of obsessed with. That second novel, The Shadow House, I think that was the major problem with the first draft, which was largely considered a bit of a failure. And I think the problem was that it wasn't unified by a particular place.
Okay.
It was a terrible title. It was called The Mystery Box, which was obviously, it's about a thing. You know, I had these characters moving around from country to country, and all. It was.
Sounds like it changed a lot from that first.
Massively, yeah, because it ended up being set in an eco village, like in you know, just very much in one place. But I think that is really helpful for me, at least, to anchor a story to one particular place. And I do get really obsessed, particularly with houses and people's spaces and where they want to live and the history of those places and spaces, who's been there before, what kind of functions has it served in the past, and, you know, who's been through those hallways and those doors and stuff.
That must have been a challenge rewriting a novel so comprehensively.
It was pretty awful, because it was...
Is this a trauma memory?
Though? Yeah, a little bit. Have you got a couch I can lie down on? I'll pay you $400. It was a big deal. And it was also my second novel.
Which is a challenge in itself.
Oh, my God. Second novel syndrome is such a real thing. And I was panicking the whole time. I had full sort of imposter syndrome. And it was really unpleasant. But I think, for me, one of the best, most rewarding and most creatively rich aspects of the job is the collaboration. And I think without the fact that I had a two-book deal, you know, there was something going to come out. And because I had a team already invested in that, I think without that, it would have languished in a drawer, you know. But because we were all invested in changing it, there was this kind of wonderful period where people were going, well, look, these are the things that work, and these are the things that don't, and these are the reasons why. And I was able to kind of think through those things and reimagine the novel that way, rather than just panicking that it was just awful. You know, it's just terrible. It was actually, once we'd done that and the panic was over, it was a really fun experience then, kind of, you know, almost Jengering, you know, or kind of
problem solving.
Reworking pieces. And I literally cut up the manuscript into kind of, you know, pieces and moved it around on my floor like a jigsaw. I haven't done that again, though, because I think I learned such a lot from that.
I was going to say, do you think going through that process and really analyzing your work to that level gave you, I don't know, a framework that you can then utilize for next time around?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about, particularly about structure.
Yeah.
I have an acting background, acting training, and so I come at story from a place of emotion and kind of character. My job, my training was about interpreting work and, you know, embodying it and performing it. And so the actual structuring of an idea has been a massive learning curve for me. That's really where I've had to knuckle down and really learn a different craft.
It sounds like, I mean, such a luxury, though, to have this team of people who are there championing your work and giving you those suggestions. I think that's something that so many writers crave, especially those who are still seeking publication on their first book, you know, and not knowing why their book keeps getting rejected, knowing there's something in it, but not being able to, I guess, uncover that kernel. So it sounds like you were really lucky to have that. Sounds like great that you had that two-book deal, because perhaps if not for that, maybe it would have been too hard and I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, it was a proper ordeal, that second one. But yeah, I mean, I have been incredibly fortunate, and I'm very, very grateful, especially to the people who respond positively to the fact that I love to collaborate, you know, like that's not for all writers.
No.
And some of them really are, you know, they'd much prefer to be alone till the very last minute and then open the door. And for me, that moment could not come soon enough. You know, I love the people. I actually prefer to create stories in, you know, almost like a rehearsal room way, or like a writer's room.
Screenwriter's room,
That's kind of my happy place, is like, you know, how many brains can we filter this thing through? It's like how much energy can we, you know, I find it so much more invigorating and inspiring as well. Like the energy that I need to write a good story, it's much harder for me to conjure that if I'm just alone in a room day after day.
It's funny because I imagine a lot of writers would be quite the opposite.
Yeah. I think they probably are.
But I think it's like an introvert extrovert thing, because I like you, you know, I like to talk to people about my ideas and get their ideas and weave it all together. And yeah, I think it is more rare. I think a lot of writers just like to go it alone, but there's all sorts of ways of approaching the challenge of writing a novel.
And that's the beauty of it as well. You know, you're going to get a much different reading experience from somebody maybe who works that way to somebody who doesn't. I don't know. I also think that, you know, ultimately, I don't think anything is created completely in isolation. And no matter how you write a book, you are going to have to edit it with other people at some point. So you might as well embrace it.
I mean, unless you self-publish. And then you can have complete control.
Oh, that's true. No, that is true. And I'd be quite interested to talk to somebody who's self-published in that way, to kind of compare and contrast the two experiences.
Quite different. But yeah, it was lovely to meet you. I mean, went on air, like I see you around all the time. Yeah. As a coastie writer, you know, I see your name and face at all these events. So it was lovely to meet you in person, and I'm sure I'll see you again around the
traps. I hope so. Yeah, it's always lovely to connect with local writers and creators. And yeah, so it's a real joy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for speaking with us.
This has been a special presentation of the Not Quite Right podcast in collaboration with Words on the Waves Writers Festival. Check the show notes for more information about Words on the Waves and the books mentioned in this episode. If you're new to the podcast, please join us again for our regular episodes where we talk about media, culture, and the art of writing. Something didn't...